for love's sake that we are to be salt, even when it stings those around us a bit, even when it costs us. Because God wills, Jesus teaches here, to use us to slow down the decay of goodness, of truth, of beauty, of righteousness and justice in our world. So take heed, you, if you would be a disciple of the man Jesus. And consider this, where would you rather be? Trampled as useless and toothless under the feet of other people? Or in the hand of God, gripped as a chosen instrument of His to bless the world by challenging and restraining the evil in it. Now, the people who first heard this sermon, of course, had to reflect on Jesus' teaching here and ask themselves, what does this mean for Monday morning? And before we turn to the candlelight part of Jesus' words, it would be good for us to reflect a minute on the setting in 21st century America, where we are called to live out this teaching. Most of us live here. In June, there was a very insightful and arresting article published that was entitled Empire of Desire. And the writer says there is now, quote, a moral conviction, widespread, though often merely implied, that human beings flourish to the degree that they're free to satisfy their personal desires. The same conviction underwrites our therapeutic vocabulary of empowerment, the teaching of multiculturalism, and our paradoxical moral code of non-judgmentalism. What makes for happiness and fulfillment, and he's claiming that this is at the level of a moral conviction, what makes for happiness and fulfillment. And here we enter into the dream that defines our era. What makes for happiness and fulfillment is an empire of desire. Pure desire must be seen as the deepest, truest source of life. It's a vital energy to be cherished and worshipped, not repressed and disciplined. Now, doesn't much of that ring true? And of course, everything in this empire or kingdom of desire is regarded as plastic. Now, much of what we are discovering about plastic parts of our bodies, like the brain, for instance, much of it is good. People have been cured from strokes, debilitating strokes, because we've learned that dormant parts of the brain can be trained to take over for other parts. But in this kingdom of desire, even our sexuality is regarded as something plastic, like a transformer toy, which can be turned now into a car, now into an action hero, now into a Barbie doll, or whatever. I've read that there are now more than 50 categories of gender identity to choose from on Facebook. You can be whatever amalgamation of sexual desires you want to be. In the Empire of Desire, the writer says, quote, the deepest moral law is to be true to oneself. And what with the technological wizardry that is advancing exponentially in our day, we are now able to push out further and further the boundaries of what nature would confine us to. So the old Judeo-Christian view that, for instance, human sexuality has a fixed, unchanging nature, that is becoming retrograde, taking us backward, not forward, in the eyes of the secular culture. We are becoming an anomaly, guilty of defending old and ugly prejudices at worst, and anti-progress, anti-future at best. If this critique of our cultural moment is even halfway accurate. We have our work cut out for us to be salt. But now on to the remaining three verses. Verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. Jesus starts out, but now in verse 14, what does he do? He changes the metaphor. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp. This would be a clay lamp with an oil lamp. Many of these have been uncovered archaeologically. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. The ESV has basket. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Candle power. It's wonderful, isn't it? Candlelight, the soft yellow glow in a dark room, and oil light, you know this, gives off the same lovely hue as does the paraffin, the wax, in a candle wick. Listen to how one commentator contrasts and compares salt and light. It's very interesting. He says, if salt emphasizes the negative function of delaying decay and warns disciples of the danger of compromise and conformity to the world, then light speaks positively of illuminating a sin-darkened world and warns against a withdrawal from the world that does not lead others to glorify the Father in heaven. So here's the principle. We're not to be only working at being salt, that God might use us to help restrain evil. We are also to be working at being light, that God might use us to help promote the good. Why? In order that people might trace that good all the way back to Him, to God Himself. You see, Jesus Christ came as a king. Why? To confront every other kingdom with the claims of the kingdom of God over the whole world. And our witness to that wonderful and powerful truth will be compromised if we pull back, if we circle the wagons and fail to do good, fail to engage the people around us who are so squeezed into the mold of the cultures they live in. If we fail to serve them and find things to do that they themselves count as good deeds. Just a couple of things to point out here in particular under this heading of the call here to be light. It's not stated here, but surely this is implicit that in being light for the world, we are to be humble. Jesus says here, you are the light of the world. Now, be careful. You and I don't have any more natural insight into spiritual things than the next person. God has made his people light, not by virtue of their intrinsic superiority, but rather by revealing truth to them. So it isn't about you. It's about divine revelation, God's truth, that yes, in mercy, he has opened your eyes to see. And secondly, and this is absolutely clear and explicit in the text, that in being light for the world, we are to be visible to the world, engaged in it. What does Jesus say? A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men. That is, in the view of other people, not parading it artificially, look at me, but rather as living naturally and authentically in their midst, so that by the light that our good works, our commitments to doing good in the world, the light that shines might be like the light in a room that enables you to see what's in the room. that people might see the God who in fact is in heaven, so that they may see by that light your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. You see, here is a call from Jesus to be visibly involved in doing good, and by implication, doing good toward everything that God cares about. The planet, the animals, and the rivers and trees that God spoke into existence, but especially doing good toward other people. Caring for those in need, those ostracized, those impoverished, those who are lonely, those taken advantage of, whether they are poor or rich, whether their needs are large or small, whether their needs are part of systemic patterns that need to be addressed, whether it is one individual who is helped, or a certain category of people that we are addressing, we are to be visibly involved in the doing of things that even those around us who are not part of the kingdom consider good. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, "Flight into the invisible is a denial of the call of Jesus Christ to discipleship. A community of Jesus which seeks to hide itself has ceased to follow him." A community of Jesus which seeks to hide itself has ceased to follow him. You see, if Jesus himself confronted the world by being salt for it in his day-to-day ministry and thereby helped restrain what was evil in his day, and if he affirmed the world by being light for it in his day-to-day ministry and thereby helped promote what was good, then that, friends, must be what we are to give ourselves to as well. John 8:12, Jesus spoke again to the people and he said, "I am the light of the world." He's the king. And here in this Sermon on the Mount, he commands his followers, his subjects, to do nothing less than he did. And in fact, if Jesus himself had not said these words in Matthew 5:14, we would consider them blasphemy. You, fallen people, are the light of the world. But Jesus did say it, and so it's true. And it all means that we are not to gather up our righteous skirts about us and hand the world over to itself in its irrational quest for the good. It's irrational because even as the world longs for the good, it continually and willfully blinds itself as to where and how to find that which is truly good, namely God. And so, friends, we may not say gay marriage, crony capitalism, pornography at epidemic levels, abortion on demand, rampant poverty, bizarre and reckless violence everywhere, sexual promiscuity everywhere, the creeping centralization of power at almost every level of government, war, world hunger and disease, technology developing exponentially with few moral constraints on it, some of it dramatically scary, terrorism, ongoing racial conflict, now on the front burner, not only here but across the nation, loneliness, people living without purpose. What do you expect? The rebel world is out there doing just what it wants to do. Let's just us keep our house in order. That's hard enough anyway. No need to think too much about all that stuff or get involved in it. The form of this world is passing away anyway. The New Testament says so. Let's just work on being the church and try not to get corrupted ourselves. No, we are to live as a city on a hill, like Jerusalem is on a hill, like San Francisco is on a hill. That's where we are to live. Salt and light. And so one writer puts it this way, thus the kingdom norms, that is all the Beatitudes in verses 3 through 12, so work out in the lives of the kingdom's heirs, that is those who put their trust in King Christ and follow him in the yoke of his discipleship. The kingdom norms work out in the lives of the kingdom's heirs as to produce the kingdom witness by their being salt and light. Of course, some of this has to do, when it gets worked out practically, it gets worked out corporately in groups, in ministries, in families. But a lot of it gets worked out individually. A lot of it gets worked out in the workplace. I saw a quote the other day that made me stop and think. The church cannot fulfill its mission out in the world if it neglects the 90,000 hours its people will spend in the workplace in their lifetime. That's where a good part of being salt and light needs to take place. A week ago, Friday, at the arts night here, we heard from one Christian woman, a theater artist, sensitive to this calling here to be salt and light. She wrote this, the theater is a broken place. Casting is cruel and backstabby at all levels, from community theater to Broadway. The dressing room is a spiritual war zone where everyone is starving for grace and truth. I have opportunities to spread the gospel in extraordinary ways. I shudder to think how often I fail at this. Some of us who were at the conference on homosexuality a couple weeks ago heard a very striking story about someone who was precisely doing what we are called to be and do here. He was one of the main speakers, and he was giving a conference someplace defending the traditional view of homosexuality, but talking very carefully about it from a clinical perspective. And a gay activist got a hold of the fact that this conference was going to be in a certain place, and he put a little thing on YouTube. He was calling out the troops to come and to protest. And this fellow was called, the speaker at this conference was called all kinds of awful things in this video clip. Well, he thought, since they're coming anyway, I'm going to invite them. So he called up and he invited this guy to come. They sat in the front rows, the activists. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the speaker actually gave them an opportunity to stand up and express their concerns. And after it was over, he went back on YouTube, this activist, and he said, you know, this wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I disagreed with a lot of what they said, but this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And all of his activist friends wrote back and tore him to shreds, because he was departing from the party line. But wonderfully, Mark Yarhouse told us that he had opportunities to have coffee with this fellow. Who knows where it would go after that? But certainly this young man thought of Christians differently after that little confrontation, if you will call it that. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Both we are to do, but only in the power of the crucified Jesus, the crucified, resurrected, ascended Lord, who has poured out his Spirit